I ask that you please listen to my message. It's not even a message. It's more like audio diary. And it's the truth, 100%. And I challenge my brother, my estranged wife, and her whole family to please not be cowards and liars, and finally come to court and face me. Bring your evidence. Bring everything you got, because I think I'm the only person ever to have been put through all of these crimes of the heart, worse of all, what you guys are doing to my children, especially the two youngest. What do you gain from alienating their father? Huh? Their father, who took care of them night and day from the time they were born, while you, mommy, were doing what? I don't know. Let's go to court and stop ducking me. Stop buying time. Stop alienating them. Stop abusing them. Because, while I was around, you weren't very nice. Huh? Look at them. Look at poor Reggie. Look at him. He's got black circles under his eyes. He's constantly shaking. Huh? Huh? Look at Gina. She's shrinking. Huh? What do you gain? Huh? But of course, it's the shock collar. It's the madame. It's your mom, your mother, the same mother who got your father into drug dealing. That's right, I said it. Huh? Got him into drug dealing. And then when he went to jail, left him for your molester in chief, who is living with my children right now. Your glorious stepfather, Ronald Feldman. Sue me, Ronnie. Come on. Go for it. You guys, put yourself in my shoes, huh? Years ago, this nightmare started when these animals, Mr. Napoleon Complex himself, Mr. Drug Dealer Extraordinaire, I'm so bad, I'm so tough, you better run out, you know, but comes with his corruption, his pack of Keystone Cops, and begins the nightmare. But hey, you know what? Why didn't you accept defeat? Huh? Look at me. I'm calling you out. America, please spread this message. Come on. All I want is a level playing field. Okay? I want this to be exposed. Above all, I want my two youngest children. My oldest one, He's he hasn't recovered from what they initially did to him, to us. But, Michelle, let's start with your job, huh? Let's start with your job. I'm holding in my hand a card that you got from your boss, who, you know what? Better yet, I'm going to give my phone number at the end of this so people can call me and I can send screenshots and things like that, because I have so many documents that completely and unequivocally verify everything I'm saying. And that is the reason why you guys stall, why you guys lie. When I called for a welfare check, someone lied to me. It was either the police or someone in your family, because I called one time on the 28th of June, one time, and it had been days. It had been the longest time I had gone without speaking to my children since they were born. The longest time I had gone without knowing anything about them. And lo and behold, I asked for a welfare check, and what do I get? Nothing. When I call back hours later, after being, well, there's an email from the assistant chief explaining and collaborating what I'm saying. But anyway, after being mistreated and told, oh, I thought you didn't want to be called, which makes no sense, I get a page or I get a text from my witch-in-law saying, the police are very mad at you because of your constant repeated calls. You have to stop calling them over and over. Tomorrow, the missus is going to speak to her attorney on the 29th, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Please note down that everything I'm saying, I have paperwork to back it up. Okay? This is my local swamp situation here. How long are you going to get away with this junk, huh? I don't want anything except a forum, a level playing field, you know? A long time ago, when I was introduced to this system that I never imagined could be manipulated and warped in such a way, I fought, and at the end of the day, my adversaries, the two main complainants and their attorney, didn't show up. They were the whole time. They were buying time, playing for time, and you know what they did to me? They made so many outlandish claims about me that were totally false. Not even close to being real. And on the 14th of July of 2006, in the chambers of future Chief Justice Joel Brown, I made a simple request. I requested that all these lies and all these vicious innuendo and conjecture and hearsay, all these things that they filed behind my back, and all, and on top, you know, I even have documents where you can easily tell that they were altered, they were doctored. But that's not the point. The point is that when, upon hearing the judge ask them, first of all, you know you guys didn't show up because you thought you were going to go to jail. Huh? That's right. Both of you didn't show up because you both thought you were going to go to jail. Right, little Willie? Right, slick Willie? That's right. That's why you didn't show up. Huh? Where were you? Huh? Tough guy? Hey, you were requesting permanent custody 2 weeks before? Huh? Where were you? And then you participated via the telephone with your ex-wife, and I'll say that in quotations, quote, ex-wife, unquote. How come you guys didn't show up with the attorney, Mr. Bending and Lying, huh? What happened when Judge Brown told you about sealing all these lies about me? Someone started, I think it was you, Count Mon Diego, aka Diegues, you started saying something about it being a cover-up. I mean, how can you cover up something that never existed? But anyway, and remember what you were told? That if that was your attitude, what was going to happen, huh? What did you just say? Let's have an evidentiary hearing for me, for Mr. Aleman. And if he decided that you were wasting the court's time, he was going to fine you guys, you and your clients. Whoa, and you guys sure did a 360, huh? Ho, 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 ho. Huh? In other words, you guys were defeated, and rightfully so. Because you guys should have never been in the fight to begin with, because you had nothing to fight for. You didn't even, it was less than a dog for you guys. It was everything for me. But for you, what was it, huh? What was it? You guys committed so many acts of misconduct, taking my car full of my stuff. And, I mean, in empowering yourselves with a house that was mine, but you guys purposely put in the name of my brother-in-law. But with all that aside, what happened? What did you guys do? Sneak McDeeks, huh? Hey, Maria, what did you do? What happened when you went to my son's school shortly after? Huh? And I went over there for the second time, because the first time I went over there, they looked at me like if I had the plague, like if I was something out of a nightmare. People grabbing their kids. I can't only imagine what you said about me. And during this time, there was an order in effect where my son wasn't even supposed to sleep over your house, let alone be living with you. And you taking him to school, and, you know, being Miss Bubby, you know. When I got those papers that I won custody. No, we won custody, but, you know, your daughter had told me not to take these papers to school, where I specifically requested that you were not allowed over there at the school. What happened? You called crying, why weren't I not allowed in the school? Do you remember, Maria? Huh? Do you remember? But yet, while I went back to trying to put my life back together and catch up on all the time that I was never going to get back, because you see, you guys kept your daughter and her suspect lifestyle under the same roof. Although in her own words, I have all the fighting and all the beatings and all the stuff you dig to not to mention Matthew having getting his ears sucked by Grandpa. Remember that? And all that sick shit because his father did it to him or whatever. Huh? Anyway, while I was trying to catch up my life with my son and wife, I guess. You guys didn't seal anything. You guys sealed your daughter's stuff, like getting fired from UM, which she lied about on her application for the county. That's right. You guys sealed all her bullcrap. And my stuff, what you guys ended up doing was filing a false, like, what is it, an outcome, I guess? That you voluntarily withdrew. Like, if you guys were so nice, so considerate. You know, I have complete faith in the fact that if you guys got a scan of your brain, I guarantee that you guys have snorted so much coke. Both of y'all, you and Willie, especially from the 80s with the crack cocaine and champagne days, that your whole frontal lobe is completely just non-existent or extremely damaged. Huh? Wanna bet? The things you guys would say and do it's incredible, but I'm the one that apparently has the problems. What is my problem? Let me see. I don't drink. I don't drink. I don't do drugs. You guys can say whatever you want because that's all you guys do is talk, and in fact, I couldn't even almost die in peace, literally. I had a stroke, ladies and gentlemen, in which my wife left me sitting there for 3 days. And I have to thank my son, my oldest son, because he basically saved my life. Thanks, Matt. It was terrible. I'll never forget just falling backwards and sitting there slumped, and my whole body was so heavy, and I can hear like if it was an echo, and I was trying to speak. It's like, you know, like what do they call it, sleep paralysis. And I remember like the first day or second day, Matthew saying, "Mommy, Daddy don't look well. Leave him alone. He needs to rest. He needs to rest. Stay away from him. Leave him." And I remember trying to move so... I was exhausted. Beyond exhausted. My eyes still couldn't open. And my hands couldn't move. But I had tried so hard. And then I remember hearing the door close. Boom! And just... going back into that, I guess, I can, you know, stroke. My leg was, you know, when I woke up, I saw, but my leg, my right leg, my whole right side was getting filled with liquid. And on the third day evening, I remember hearing my son say, "Mommy, Daddy's not well. Daddy's not well." Now, Did he say that exactly? You know what? They're going to nitpick. I know. People like them, they're so desperate that I know they're going to try to dissect this bull crap. But the point is that what woman leaves a man sitting slumped over in a couch for days? Huh? And I remember him coming over and her saying, "Leave him alone, leave him alone," or whatever, you know, the ruckus. And I remember thinking, I gotta wake up. And I remember, and I was trying to pray. You know, I was trying to pray, but though I can hear it in my mind's eye, I can see myself trying to stand up and what I wanted. And I can hear myself within myself. I couldn't get it going. I just couldn't break that spell. So suddenly, now I'm not sure whether Matt went to pick me up. You will have to ask him. But somehow he maneuvered me where I was able to snap out of it and realize I was in big trouble. I felt like I had boulders in my throat. 3 days without drinking any water. And my right leg had to be carried. My son had to hold my leg because I couldn't get to the car. And Michelle claimed, making a big deal about the whole thing, like she does, because, you know, she's special in her own way. And I remember thinking, oh wow, what happened? And I remember getting to the hospital and trying to drink something, and the doctor saying, no, wait, you gotta run your blood, whatever. Now please keep in mind, I hate needles, and I hate needles in my veins. Not like you, Maria, who loves morphine in your veins, by the way. You love that mainline stuff, huh? I even the catheter has to be on the vein of my, on the top of the back of my hand, on the top of my hand, because I just it's just a phobia of mine. When the blood results, the test results came back, they threw me in a wheelchair and they rushed me to the what was it called? The critical care unit. Now, when I was the critical care unit, I'll never forget trying to pee and no dice. I felt like I was peeing backwards. And then in a funny, ironic twist, I guess, the ultimate nightmare for a person who hates needles would be dialysis. I guess, right? I guess many of you would agree. So has anybody ever out there been on dialysis? Well, by the way, let me mention, my mother-in-law tells everybody that I was never on dialysis. Of course, she never went to the hospital to see me, but the month I was there, but she says that I claim, because I want people to feel sorry for me. It's just, but anyway, I remember thinking, oh wow, guys, what do you do? It's such a terrible feeling. But the worst feeling is, ever your little man, my little red, you running around there, coming around, looking at me, and me trying to tell him I'm it's okay. But he has autism and he's nonverbal. And, you know, Matthew was okay at the time, I guess, you know, but little Ray baby, you know. Anyway. I remember that one of those nice nurses, you know, and I'm not going to get into stereotypical stuff, but let's just say she came over my intercom because I had a, you know, a gentleman with an alternative lifestyle come up to me and wanted to install a catheter or like a freaking needle with a hole on it through the eye of my one-eyed snake that's attached to my, you know, body. Of course, without anesthesia or whatever. And you know, it's cool, you know, whatever. If that's going to keep me from, you know, or it's going to make me better. But I'll never forget when I kind of hesitated, he went back and he spoke to his nurse, boss, supervisor, whatever. And she yelled through the intercom, "Yo, man, what you want? Man, you been partying, man. You want to go on that anesthesia?" That's exactly how she sounded. That's exactly what she said. And I said, no, I don't want no dialysis. And I don't know what the hell you're talking about party. Because you know what? They thought, by the way, I've never been drunk in my life, for the record. Take that in your pipe and smoke it, you junk heads. But nonetheless, I said, no, I don't want dialysis. Is this going to prevent me from dialysis? It sure is. And guess what? I had to sit there while Bobby Trendy worked the you know, a medieval device through and through, and guess what? It didn't work. So somehow, some way, my next memory is being woken up, and doctors all around me. And now I'm rolling in my bed was. They were taking me somewhere, and I remember thinking, "Oh wow!" And I remember everything starting to just go into slow motion. And we loaded into an elevator, took us down to. I guess there's no basements in Miami, but this was South Miami Hospital, so it was somewhere underneath the critical care unit. And I'll never forget, I went into a room with a bunch of doctors there. I saw people scrubbing their hands, all little clocks, and I started to freak out. The moment somebody started talking about that the dialysis machine needed to be calibrated, blah, 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 I started freaking out. I haven't been that scared since, I don't think ever. And while I sat there, while I laid there, I remember thinking, oh my God, it's gonna happen. Oh my God, this was just a nightmare, a living nightmare. And I remember them telling me, you have to calm down, you know, and you have to relax. And I remember looking at them like, yeah, okay, I'm gonna relax, all right. I remember thinking, is it worth it? Is it worth it having something coming out of my veins? But you know, I didn't know what the hell. I didn't know the first thing about dialysis, and I didn't want to know the first thing about dialysis. So I began to pray. And I began to pray that, you know, kind of crying a little bit, you know. Not embarrassed, but Saying, God, you know, I'm not a bad guy. I'm not perfect. But you see everything and you're everywhere. And why is this happening? Why? What's that gonna do? And I just kept getting so nervous that I remember, almost like I can hear my heart, doom, doom, doom. And they kept saying, you gotta calm down, you gotta calm down. And all of a sudden, I started saying, Jesus Christ Almighty. Jesus Christ Almighty. Jesus Christ Almighty. Jesus Christ Almighty. And I repeated, that until eventually it turned into Jesus Christ Almighty. Please give me the strength. Give me the strength to overcome what I'm facing right now. You know better than me. And as I started to say these words, I'll never forget that in my mind's eye, I envisioned my son, my oldest son, in the same situation. And it was like almost a trade-off. Like if I was in the corner of the room and it was either him or I doing this dialysis thing, whatever they were gonna do. I didn't know what there was, needle holes or whatever they were gonna install or stick in me. And I remember starting to relax because immediately I realized that no, they were gonna have to do it to me, not him. Then my wife, believe it or not, her face came to my mind's eye, and she was in the same situation. Like if it was either going to be her or me. And all of a sudden, before my little baby Reggie's cutie peeny, cutie patootie face even come to the picture, I remember saying, no, that's it, come on. And I remember telling them, go ahead, do what you gotta do. Hell no. Forgive me, I didn't say hell no, but I remember this calm coming over me and all the fear going away. I really felt no fear. None. None whatsoever. This is like almost like the same thing that would happen if when a father or mother would visit a zoo and their kid fell into the lion den. You know you're jumping in. You know you're flying to that den before your kid hits the ground. Well, all the people are calling the zookeeper or whatever. It's just an instinct. Instinct, don't think. Instinctively, I was not going to allow my little baby to be subjected to anything like that. I had already taken him to the hospital for an MRI, and there was no way. There's no. And I was the one tasked to take him to the doctor, and you know, no. And it was extremely hard, just watching, you know, how comfortable he was, and it wasn't gonna happen. So I was actually eager. I was like, come on, man, bring it. Bring it on. I'm ready. And the look on these people's face was like, okay. And before I knew it, they brought something towards me, and I'm trying to hold on my arms or whatever, and they're like, no, relax. And I felt something kind of burn my neck, and then and before I knew it, I had like an octopus thing stuck inside my neck with hoses sticking out. Now that was inside what was inside my neck actually had like little little, I guess they're called like little plot, like little, that would hook into my veins or my artery, I don't know, whatever, but I was ready to go. I had my my tube sticking out my neck, and it was not bad at all. So I was looked back, and there was a guy up there, Jose, I think his name was, and he was putting together the machine. And now these machines just stack, they're like stacked, like they're like boxes, I guess, or whatever. And I remember he was not very, very, he was not in a very nice, very good mood. And I remember him looking at me like, what's this guy smiling about? And I remember thinking, hey, okay, so, well, you know, when are you going to get this, this thing going? Come on, let's get this party started. Because at this moment, the good Lord had removed all fear. For the first time, I can actually say that I looked forward to this. It's dialysis. Whoa. Anyway, eventually they hooked it up to my neck. And the way it works is when it first turns on and the blood comes out your neck, it feels like they're yanking you. But then it stabilizes and, you know, they calibrate it and, you know, they to remove so much or whatever, and then these like wheels start spinning, and you see your blood coming out your neck, out this hose, going into this machine, and like those old reel-to-reel machines. I remember sitting there going, dialysis, it's quite the triple dip, don't you know? And this guy was in a bad mood, but he started smiling, and he was like, okay, you know, ¿qué te pasa? You know, what's the matter? I'm like, no, man, I thought this was going to be a lot worse, man. This ain't Jack, you know? But I remember having to control myself, because if I started using bad language, I knew that I would let the enemy in. And the enemy was due through the doors at any time the next day or whatever. So the invisible enemy. I didn't want to be scared, and I didn't want to lose the edge God had given me, or had whatever. And it really wasn't that bad, honestly. I mean, surely, you know, thereafter I was wheeled up into my room. And there I would go weeks without taking a bath. And having a bunch of medical students coming and asking a bunch of questions. And because they couldn't figure out, you know, because of course, if they would have discovered any illicit drugs, they would have shipped me out from the beginning to Jackson. I would have not been their problem. But they ended up concluding or speculating there was salt, which I have to agree on. I used to love salt. And stress or whatever someone, or by mistake, I may have drank, you know, whatever happened. The thing is that I'll never forget, it had been already, I don't know, a couple of years since my brother was semi-estranged from me. And I remember him calling, and I got the phone, and I was so happy to hear from my buddy, my best friend, you know. I remember him saying, and I remember him, the first thing he did was ask him how he was doing. said, "Oh, no, 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 how you doing? No, no, no." And before I can say anything, the call dropped. And stayed the rest of the day, the evening, waiting for him to call back. And he never did. Then my father came with his only brief visit, of course. For 2 minutes, came and saw me and told me, how sorry he was because I was always mistreated, and not always, but things were unfair, and you know, here's a check for $100 to pay for whatever. And I remember telling him, "Hey, but where, you know, but I was talking to you and my brother and saying, oh, no, don't worry about him, you know. He's too busy." And I remember thinking, wow. But yet, I love him so that I thought maybe he was worried about me. I don't know, you know, you lie to yourself when you love something so much. But anyway, did I mention that my quote-unquote wife was pregnant at the time of all this? And not only was she pregnant, but I had told her and begged her not to bring the children whenever I was downstairs in the dialysis unit. To please, and I remember making it clear, I remember her with her patent pending, "Oh, just shut up, stupid. You know, oh, I already heard you." But well, lo and behold, one morning, I'm downstairs sitting and getting prepped, and at the moment they connect the hose to the machine and the blood starts coming out, I look at the door. It's to my left, maybe 10 feet ahead of me. And guess who walks in with both my kids, who lock eyes with me, and their eyes opened up so big that it looked like they were in shock. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I didn't want to lose control, I didn't want to scream, but I remember thinking, how evil can you be? How? And I remember trying to grab the curtain, I almost fell off the bed. Anyway, it was her mistake. You know, people make mistakes, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, everyone makes mistakes. You know, she's made a lot of mistakes, I've made a lot of mistakes. Yeah. Just her mistakes just seem to hide so many things that are just a little suspect at best. But anyway, eventually, I had the best care a guy can ask for. And I had a great physical therapist. And the goal was for me to be able to walk. Maybe, I don't know. I guess it's like 20 feet without hobbling. The point is that I needed to get out of there because I couldn't let this woman, my wife, my then wife, with my baby, and Reagan and Matt, because it was just a matter of time before tragedy was going to happen, because I know her, and I know how crazy and how quadruple polar she gets, or she is. Yeah. She threw herself on the floor and screamed on Father's Day, 2001. Father's Day. Check it out. It has to be on a report somewhere. But that's a story for another day. But anyway, so I had to calm my way out of that hospital before I could even recover. And they were, I needed to be in a wheelchair. It was taking too long, but nonetheless, I was not ready. But it had to happen. It's time to go. It's time to go because, you know, something didn't feel right. And sure enough, before I knew it, I was able to get the hell out of there. And I had almost become a skeleton, by the way. Lost a lot of weight. But I was alive. I was hobbling. I had trouble talking, speaking, but to the dismay of many, I guess. Anyway, I was so happy that I was able to be with my little Reggie. And you know, Matt, he was cool. By this time, you know, he was already, you know, hanging out with his mom a lot, or with my mother-in-law, whatever, you know. Fast forward, when they told me, when they made a mistake on, my wife was pregnant, made a mistake on the sonogram, and I remember Dr. Lee, wherever you are, I remember being offered the option of aborting my baby, because the likelihood that she was going to come out with Down syndrome. Imagine this. I'm kind of damn stroke. Now I'm being told that due to the, and this is another cover up on the part of, first of all, my completely common sense wife, who didn't realize something, whatever, you know what, evidentiary hearing, discovery, it'll explain itself anyway. When he said to me about aborting, and I looked at him, and I remember her, you know, looking at me like, well, you know, kind of like, you know, remember Scarface, kind of like when my mother looks at Tony because, you know, 500, you know what I'm saying? You know, huh? And Tony says, what? But, you know, the bag of Chandler's out? That's how I felt. no way. I go, no. No. First and foremost, I'm changing doctors. We're changing doctors. We're getting rid of this absent lady who was pregnant. Her doctor was pregnant at the time. And absolutely not. Under no circumstance am I going to be responsible, or am I going to even live with myself knowing that. I didn't want to say it, but anyway. Sure enough, we got our new doctor, Kontopoulos. God bless you, wherever you are. And she immediately went to work, and she injected my wife with something for kids' lungs to develop or whatever. Took my wife to Jackson. And my baby girl was born. 3.5 pounds. Little baby girl. She was a preemie, but she was my little cutie patootie woody woody. I'll never forget that she was, they had to keep her in the hospital until she got to a certain weight. And I remember I didn't miss a day. Every day of going. And, Michelle screaming at me, calling me names, telling me to clean this and to do that, you know, just her normal verbal abuse. By the way, Matthew, please, I have proof in your own handwriting and other things. So whatever you've been influenced into, you're not a little boy anymore. You're almost 18, okay? So I would collect myself and think before selling out any further. But anyway, that little baby girl represented everything. I felt weak, you know, which is expected, but her existence gave me the strength, the surge of vitality, of purpose, you know. And the following is of complete fact. So this is one of the things that life, you know, the mysteries of life. I'll never forget waking up and thinking, the baby. Something was wrong with the baby. And I remember that the ladies or the nurses at the preemie, you know, incubation place, whatever, they weren't very nice. Let's just be honest here now. And when you got there, you had to scrub up, which is right. You have to clean up, whatever. And I remember that day, my baby daughter had been taken for tests. Now, I didn't know how these tests were done, of course, but I knew because I had written it down. And I remembered because I couldn't forget it. Kept playing in my mind, which is the baby's test. When I got there, we got there. I remember, I'll never forget, when I got to where her little place was, where her little incubator was, it wasn't there. And when I located her, I remember thinking, something's wrong. It was driving me up a wall. And I remember looking and asking, you know, about the test. Maybe something came back in the test. It turns out that the tests were run by putting a needle into her foot to take out blood. And what they did was, they took off her little name tag, little ring thing that goes on people's wrists, on her little foot. They took it off. They drew the blood out, whatever, and then they put it back on again. But guess what? The baby had gained some weight or something, I guess, because it was so tight that when I managed to get her sock off, her foot was purple. It was so tight. And I remember thinking, what a movie. It looked like clay. It looked like when you squeeze clay and it starts folding and about to fall off. I remember asking, cut this off. And of course, I'm the bad guy. I'm, you know, play it, you know. That's what they always claim. You know, I'm such a bad person. I'm the one who's causing problems. I didn't care. And I remember one of the nice nurses had one of those safety scissors or whatever. And we cut off her foot, and her little foot, it just kind of like formed again. I remember I was so upset. And of course, the missus was like, like trying to get herself mad. But when she looked at the women, you know, because she is a coward. Oh my God, she's terrified of other women. She's tough. She'll punch me in the face in front of a million people. She'll start beating me over the head with a phone while my kids are in the car. She'll pull my hair. She'll do a lot of things. She'll start screaming and braiding me in front of everywhere, anywhere, anytime. But let another woman, you know, just stare her down, and boy, she stops getting mad right away. Incredible wholesome work. And I'll never forget, they looked up, they sized her up right away. I just looked up and down like you ain't about crappy dappy. and then of course she looked at me and started going off on me. Yeah, and then sort of shut up. Babies in there and stuff, and it was bonkers. Nonetheless, my father-in-law came by with my brother-in-law, who had to play a tough guy around here just to see for my mother and for my sister. You know, yes, Devin, yes, you, Mr. had to get a restraining order against me to try to destroy me in the beginning, back in 2004, you know, after you called my cousin and tried to bribe her into lying about me, but yet they didn't let her testify. But that's another part of the story. Oh my God, discovery. Columbus. I don't care. Anyway, as one of my sons recently discovered, emails that he had sent his mother and I in 2017, Mom, stop yelling at Daddy, stop mistreating him. You're always mistreating him. You and your family have always mistreated him. Yeah, her father at one point told me, have you looked in the mirror? You look like shit. You know, it was just a constant, you know, barrage. But I took it because I needed to be by my kids, especially my two youngest. Because that little girl, my little baby Gina, for some reason, in the beginning, because Reagan was still, you know, extremely, you know, difficult to, whatever, he was never difficult. Nonetheless, I used to have to bathe him 5-6 times a day or whatever, da, 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 da. And Matthew was barely there. He was just there to, you know, early in the morning. He left for his mom and then came back late. And whatever happened, the point is that my wife thought that her stepmother would be a good idea to help take care of the baby, because, you know, we were moving and, you know, that things everywhere and whatever. At least, you know, in the beginning. And guess what happens? Not even 2 weeks in, and I have the emails, ladies and gentlemen. I think the baby was a couple weeks old. When wanted to add, well, guys, as you know, I'm recording this right now. As you can see, that's my life. Hear that noise? That's my my executive suite where my studio is making this recording from. That it's just that's a newest beat around. It's called the Street Sweeper. Check it out. Just kidding. Anyway, I'm sorry I didn't. Well, sorry, there was my back beat. The Street Sweeper's running. Anyway, run by. Anyway, I was cut off when I was trying to say that my father-in-law, Mr. Napoleon Complex Extraordinaire, one night. Okay, like I said, I'm sorry. I was saying that I was setting the this part of our lives. Well, my wife, whatever, she thought that when she went back to her social, you know, to her job, where whatever she does. On the computer, and comes home and takes out her drama on me, out on us, or on me, whatever. You know what? Here, let's stick to the fact of what happened. Her father and her stepmother had gone to the Keys. Okay, so her stepmother wanted to pass by and pick up the baby girl because I had been up the whole night cleaning the air conditioning that had frozen because the filter was dirty, whatever the point, whatever, and it had water went everywhere, and you know, maintenance, you know, wasn't going to be up, whatever. The point being that I had moved by myself because, I mean, things are beautiful. I mean, I can't, thinking back now. Anyway, it turns out that the first apartment we had, when my mother-in-law left me on purpose on Mother's Day, left me alone with my car, knowing that I had to get a battery, she came back and Michelle almost burned the house down. And somehow, I didn't know, and by the time I got, I was so upset. By the time I got there, I guess it smelled like it was burning, but she forgot to mention the fact that the house almost caught on fire. Anyway, I'll never forget what happened that night. Now, please, I'm sorry I'm backing up now, but it's completely relevant too. And by the way, people, please, please, please. 305-338-2653. 305-338-2653. Lawyers, people, whatever, call me. Let's put it all together, okay? Let's do whatever has to be done. I don't care. But let's get this straight. Let's get this right. And let's get my kids back. At least back safe. Anyway, I can't say that this, because we had a massive fire, okay? All right, check this out. When I get back, you know, she had opened all the windows, and I asked her what happened, whatever, and I was so tired anyway, but she didn't say, and I didn't want to be yelled at, and you know, there was already some guys hanging around, and every time she saw guys, and especially whatever, they were younger, she'd make a point to give me dirty looks, or to act like she was the ultimate victim, and she was just always trying to get me into some kind of melee or the other, one thing or the other. Anyway, and that night, something just woke me up. I'll never forget. We slept with the baby. In between us, but really, like, on my side, and I kind of slept on the floor, really. But, you know, watching, you know, getting up every 2 minutes, and something woke me up, like, hey. And I remember I walked into the kitchen, and it was like lightning was in the kitchen. It went boom, and like something just like exploded, but it was like this like neon. I can't explain it, and there was flames everywhere, and I was like, whoa. And I remember Matthew was kind of heavy already, you know, he was welding up into at least 80 pounds, and I remember, it's not gonna be funny, but I'll say it anyway, I remember waking up Michelle and you know, clearing everybody outside, and I remember picking up Matthew over my shoulder and taking him outside, and Matthew walked back into the fire to try to go past him. But anyway, while I had them outside, I grabbed the fire extinguisher and did the best that I could. And I knew that water, because it looked like, I don't know, it looked electrical, because I saw that lightning in the ceiling of the kitchen, whatever. And our neighbor was so nice, you know, across the way. The fire department came, whatever. And we were living in this burnt out place for a couple days already, when we were offered three buildings up the road, you know, in the same complex, you know, a nicer place. And that's where my father-in-law and his wife, okay, that's where they came. They were, I mean, well, first of all, the MNF, okay, God, I can't stand you. You know that, right? Especially all those threats on the emails that you send, and all the stuff, and all those lies, and all the things you did. Oh, my hero. Thank you. Thank you, God. You know what? Great job. There you go. Speaking of jerks. Yeah. Adding to my sound effects here. Anyway. I couldn't believe that. When I asked, when now I had to move by myself, carry everything by myself to the new place by myself. I had a little help from some young kids who helped me just, oh, you know what, the truck, that's right, here we go. Oh my God, Michelle. Oh my God, this is just, please, I have to, look, I'm sorry to be all over the place, but this is so important. We rented a moving truck in my name. Now, as an ex or a lifetime security officer or person who is traumatized by lost keys, if I'm not using a key, I don't want it with me. If I don't need it, I don't want it with me. And I remember specifically telling Michelle, remember this, baby girl, what you did. Telling her, look, the truck, until I need to drive it, please hold the key. No problem. And she threw it in her purse. Guess what? She asked for the truck key, and I told her, you have it. And she started, really, Is that, yeah, really? You think I have it, right? Okay, you have phenomena. And now by this time, I don't know if it ever gets normal, but she just, oh boy, she just dug her talons into me and she just went off on me. And I remember thinking, now remember, keep in mind, I rented in my name a big Ryder truck to move. And let her hold the key while I was not going to be driving it. Okay? And now, day or two later, she's completely going off on me in front of a million people, yelling, calling me names because I lost the key. Well, I had made a few contacts going back to my days, you know, calling locksmiths and stuff. As I said, I was very, very meticulous with keys. And it was impossible to get a key for that truck. It was impossible. So I spent money I didn't have. And we went to a locksmith I knew, and with the code, he tried to make me a key, but the key set off the anti-theft device. After a long saga after I told her that I didn't have the key, and after having her go up and stand and look into the, and it's probably in there, you effing, man, Michelle, you really were such an abuser, you know that? If you are held accountable for 1/10 of what you and your family, if you and your family held accountable for 1/10, I don't think my great-grandchildren, our great-grandchildren will be able to spend the interest. Well, guess what? After having some guy come over and you have some special machine that will go through these codes, and he finally cut me a key. Cost me like $150. Guess what? About 2-3 hours later, she's mad about something else, and she starts emptying her purse. And guess what's in her purse? The key to the truck. The key that this loser, this Mr. Mom, this piece of crap, this ADHD dummy, this whatever, all these things, whatever. Take your pick. There was, and you know what? Oh, well, that's her response. So anyway, the mechanic who came, because the anti-theft thing kept triggering, God bless him, the records will show who he is. He helped me with the heaviest items, taking them to the new place. Anyway, where was I? Okay, now, the truck story, that's another one. There were so many things. And then she totaled the car and left. But her job in the county got her away with it, by the way. She got away with it. She ran into a... She destroyed a car. She totaled a car, by the way, and left. And everybody saw her with my son in the car. But anyway, but she got away because she works for the county. And she's Miss Powerful. And she writes for the cops. And that's why cops come to my mother's house, acting like they want to help me. And, you know, whatever. Yada, yada, yada. Anyway, like I said, 1/10 accountability. That's all we need. Well, Leprechaun Man. God, I can't stand you, Slick Willie. Well, Leprechaun Man did not say he was coming. Of course not. Because I would have never even agreed. You know. Besides, he's like his daughter in so many ways. He, you know, the little mind games, not speaking, insulting, whatever. I wasn't having it anymore. more. I really didn't want to have it ever. But let me refocus the point here. My wife's stepmother was coming to pick up our baby girl, a little preemie baby girl that I, you know, was feeding, taking care of, you know, just like every other kid we had. But anyway, and she was gonna take her to her, to the house that she shared with my then wife's father, little Napoleon's stinky fart. Anyway, and I asked her specifically, I said, you know, we moved. Do you understand where I'm gonna be waiting with the baby? Yeah. I go, are you sure? And I asked her to give me the address. I know where you live. Okay. Well, I told her to call me when she was in the area. I start hearing some honking or whatever. Bam, bam, whatever. And I call her. And she says, hey, you're not here. Where are you? And I said, wait, hold on. And I went downstairs and it was really hot. People are looking at me and I'm waiting and waiting. And I can hear her honking. And I said, listen, you know, we're in the front. I had told her and she had agreed that she had paid attention, supposedly. I said, you make your first right and then you follow the road and then it's your first left and then your first left. Can't be more complicated than that. And guess what? All of a sudden, I hear a voice say, barking. And I said, oh no. At this point, I'm drenching and sweating the baby. And I said, just tell me where you are. And Napoleon, whale blowfart, grabs the phone and says, hey, man, where the hell are you? You know, tough guy. And I remember thinking, where the hell are you? And he went, I remember people were looking and you can hear him screaming. And I remember laughing, ha ha ha, at him. Because he said something about, You have so much time before, blah, 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 blah. And I hung up on him. And the next thing I knew, the real abuse began. Believe that, the real abuse began with my then wife. Of course, wrote a letter to him, or an email to him about why was he so rude to me and blah, 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 blah. And of course, you know, he made up all this bullshit, but he threatened me, saying that I had to support, you know, here I am recovering from stroke, whatever, that I had to support the family, I had to get a job, or I had to leave Miami, like that. Do you believe that? Ooh. Well, sure enough, you know, that ended because I ended up, you know, raising the baby. And the baby was doing quite well. Then my mother-in-law muscled for just a little bit, you know, when I was really too sick. And I couldn't put the baby in jeopardy, you know. So one day here, one day. But for the most part, it was bathing Reagan, feeding Reagan, letting Michelle bathe the little baby, but watching, making sure, not, you know, that she doesn't put her under the AC like she's doing Matthew, vent, whatever. But getting the formula, getting the baby the formula. I remember that little box with me, and she used to sleep next to me, because then eventually Matthew couldn't be trusted with Reagan, because he was kind of a, you know, he wasn't being very nice to his brother. But anyway, we ended up moving out of there. And like I said, it just got worse and worse. And there's so many other things that when just all out in the open, and it's such a beautiful feeling not to fear, and to welcome the investigation, to welcome the things that they've been trying to hide for so long. Okay? People are not going to believe these things, but the evidence, because what is it? Law is not elementary, it's evidentiary. Anyway, I'm sorry if I'm all over the place. I'm sorry if this is an amateur, production. But put yourself in the shoes of my babies and myself. Okay. I'm illegally alienated from them. There's been so much wrongdoing, so many illegal things done, and I mean, there's so many layers to this that all I ask is for you people out there to believe in what you can see, what I can produce. Please, I have nothing, nobody. And the only people I have, I have nobody but me. 305-338-2653. laz@outlook.com. That again is laz.alemn@outlook.com. I welcome anybody. I don't care who you are, as long as you're not a Democrat. I'm just kidding. Maybe not. Well, whatever. You know what? As long as you're not a criminal, or as long as, you know, all I want is a level playing field and neutral minds and some kind of advocacy, because this is completely an unfair playing field. Completely unfair. But kind of like when the dialysis, when I had those visions in my mind's eye and got the strength of, well, for some reason I feel that someone's gonna come through, and I don't care if they want to write a book or books or whatever you want to do, as long as it's moving in the direction of getting justice and holding people accountable, but above all, freeing my babies and saving them before they're completely brainwashed. I appreciate your attention. God bless you, and this is not the last, but you know, it's only the beginning.